Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Joining us right now, guy does a great job for SNY, covering the Jets, the Giants, New York football. What a horrible state that is. The great Connor Hughes. Connor, thank you very much for coming on today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I want to share my Belichick theory, and then you could tell me either, boy, okay, that's genius, Evan, or I'm a giant idiot. Bill Belichick is such a hateful man that he requested to meet with Woody Johnson just so Woody would have to beg him. So the Jets would get on their hands and knees and say, oh, Bill, dear Bill, we're such a horrible franchise. We need you. Please save us. So Bill could laugh at them and then leave the room. That's my theory on why Bill Belichick reached out to the Jets. Your thoughts?
Evan, it's kind of the opposite. It was that Bill called the Jets and to express an interest in their vacancy and to see if the Jets had an interest in him as well, and the Jets basically told him that, look, if we appreciate it, thank you, but this isn't something where we're going to basically stop everything just because Bill Belichick called us, and we're going to hire you here on December and then let you pick our next general manager and all that stuff. They were willing to talk to him. They were willing to formally interview him, but he was going to be lumped in with every other head coach candidate that they were going to talk to and that they were going to interview. He wasn't going to be getting to play favorites or anything like that. And I don't think that was something that Bill Belichick was super keen on. I think he expected to just be able to get whatever job he wanted to get. And this goes back to last year when he was available after the Patriots let him go. And look, Evan, there was a pretty big ego shot that he took when he went all in on that Falcons job and then they went and hired someone else.
Right.
I don't think Bill Belichick was overly keen on the idea of interviewing for several different jobs, including potentially the Jets, and then having them hire other people. I don't think his ego could take that. So what he did was he took the bird in the middle of his hand, which was the UNC job.
Right. That was my speculation on it, Connor. People or Jets or whoever told him maybe. It wasn't yes, it was maybe. And we know what happened with maybe last year. He just wasn't that in demand, as I think a lot of people thought that he would be. What are they going to do? I know they've started some interviewing processes. Are they going head coach first, or are they doing general manager first?
They're open. I mean, you look at the guys they've interviewed so far, Tiki, and it's all people that don't have jobs right now because they can't talk to anyone currently employed by another team. So they're just getting these interviews out of the way now, and then when they're permitted to talk to other clubs, general managers and head coaches and things like that, they'll go forward with it. But I do believe that everything is on the table for this organization right now. I mean, I don't think they're opposed to hiring the coach first and then the GM, or the GM and then the head coach, anything like that. I even believe that there's a world out there where everyone that I've talked to around the NFL, and this isn't shocking or breaking or anything like that, but Mike Vrabel is believed to be the guy that the Jets covet the most, which, again, it makes sense. Like, the guy is literally the top head coaching candidate out there. But there are going to be a lot of other teams out there that could potentially be interested or are going to be interested in Mike Vrabel, and he's going to have his choice of potential teams. So the one way that you could sway him to take your opportunity over others is obviously money, which I do believe the Jets can be willing to open up the paycheck to get, or open up the bank account to get him. But also maybe saying, look, Mike, come on in here and then we'll help, or you can contribute or key in on some of the general managers that we might be talking to and have a hand in picking that as well. Because where things went super south for him in Tennessee was not necessarily he had this incredible relationship with John Robinson, but once they got rid of Robinson, he did not mesh with the management that they brought in.
Right. He wanted some more control over it, right? And that's ultimately why they moved on.
Understandably so.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't think, like, if the Jets hired Mike Vrabel, he's not going to be the GM head coach. I don't think there's going to be too many of those out there anymore. But I could see them potentially saying to Vrabel, look, You want to have a hand in picking the GM? Absolutely. We'll take all your consideration or all your thoughts into consideration. So we'll see. I mean, this is still so very early that it's nothing set in stone yet.
Is it too simplistic then that when you hear the name John Robinson, who's one of the guys they're going to interview, that, oh, it's a package deal. They get John Robinson. Mike Vrabel comes along. Is that not how that would play out in their interest in Robinson?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. In fact, admittedly, I didn't know too much about John Robinson other than the fact that he was the Titans' ex-general manager. Mm-hmm. I went back and looked at him. He's got a pretty decent draft record. Yeah, of the guys. I mean, look, he made mistakes. Isaiah Wilson was a terrible pick. Traded away A.J. Brown. There were mistakes that they made. But his draft picks were pretty good. He also had one losing season. His entire tenure there, he had one losing season, made the playoffs with two different coaches. I mean, he was pretty successful. So I think that probably played more of a role than talking to him.
How does this problem? So I'm fascinated. How does this process work? So when they're interviewing a GM, and I don't think these interviews have happened yet, but they're going to happen soon. Is it with Woody immediately? Is it with, who is it with? Is it with Mike Tannenbaum? How does this process work in terms of who they're actually interviewing with?
Yeah, so Tannenbaum and the 33rd team basically compiled names for the Jets and said, look, this is the group of guys that we believe you guys should interview. And then the Jets with Jaime and Woody and Christopher and all their brass, they're then the ones that are going to interview these guys and then pick which one they want to hire. This isn't like when Charlie Casserly and Ron Wolf did it, where basically they're like, hey, hire Todd Bowles, hire Mike Maccagnan, go. They're giving them names, right. And then the Jets will pick from that list of names. But I usually the first round of interviews could be done on Zoom, and then the second round of interviews is in person, and then third round will be something like that.
Are they are they putting their own names on, Connor?
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me. That wouldn't surprise me.
When they interview these general managers and eventually coaches, they will, I'm assuming, ask about Aaron Rodgers. Is that a trick question? Are the Jets looking for them to answer the Aaron Rodgers question a certain way? And then that will help them get hired or not?
Good question. No, I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, I think that I know everyone's looking at this game that Aaron just played. Now, it is important to remember that the Jaguars literally have the worst pass defense in the entire NFL. I looked it up after the game. I was like, man, he really balled out. And then I looked, it's like, oh, yeah, the Jaguars stink. That kind of played a role in it a little bit.
They give
Aaron
up the most 20-yard passes of any team in the league by about 12.
Mm. Oh, yeah, dude, and the Garrett Wilson touchdown, Garrett's wide open. The one to Devontae, the 70-yarder, gorgeous pass, but he's behind the defense by 3 steps.
Right, that's Tampa, too. They're supposed to be a middle field defender, and the two deep safeties are supposed to be the deepest guys on the field.
Yeah, they're bad. Jaguars are bad. They're 3-10 for a reason. They're a very, very bad football team. They were actually slated to pick one overall up until, who'd they beat, the Raiders last week?
Who I'm calling next weekend, Connor? The Raiders.
There you go. There you go. Enjoy that one. I think that the Aaron Rodgers situation right now, from everything that I have been told, it is highly, highly unlikely still that he returns. However, it's going to be a Woody Johnson decision. It's going to be a new head coach decision. It's going to be a new general manager decision that decides on whether or not Rodgers returns to the Jets next year. And also, by the way, Rodgers has a say in it as well, where he could say, I'd actually prefer to retire. Right. I don't want to keep playing. I think he probably does still want to play. Based off of my discussions and my understandings, he sounds very much like a person that still wants to go out there and give it another year and not go out like this. But I think if he doesn't like the head coach GM, he could very well decide to retire. But I don't think there's any trick question. Again, it's unlikely that he returns. But if the new GM and head coach come in here and be like, look, let's draft a guy at 8. Let's have him sit behind Aaron for a year. Let's run it back. We still have talent. I don't think that's completely ruled out.
Then, because we were debating this earlier, and my initial reaction, and I agree with you, I don't want to judge the Jacksonville game. I don't want to judge any game that he plays the rest of the year. But my initial reaction is they got to move on. I mean, I'm done with this Aaron Rodgers experiment. But Tiki always says, okay, if he doesn't come back, who's your quarterback? And the truth is, it's Tyrod Taylor and somebody you draft. It's not the best option for 2025. So I've given it second thought as a Jet fan. All right, is it worth bringing him back, seeing if they can run it back with better coaching? But you have said it's highly unlikely he comes back. Why is it highly unlikely? Is it the cap hit in the future? Is it something else? Why?
No, I don't think it's the cap hit in the future. I think that there's a lot that comes with Aaron. It's not like you're bringing back Eli Manning, or it's not like you're bringing back Matt Stafford, or it's not like you're bringing back Ben Roethlisberger. It's not someone who's going to go with the flow and do what the coach says. I mean, look, Aaron it's very obvious. Like, this was like it with McCarthy, when it was like with LaFleur, and now what it's been like here is that he wants things done a certain way. He expects things done a certain way, and that has, he's very opinionated. He has no problem at all letting his sharing his opinion. He has the outlet every week on the Pat McAfee show. He also talks to us every Wednesday and says many of the same things. He has no problem with that stuff. That does rub a lot of people the wrong way. It can rub some teammates the wrong way. It can rub ownership the wrong way. I mean, the coaches here are all on board with them, so it doesn't rub them the wrong way. But it's, you're signing up for a lot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot that comes with it other than just what happens on the field. There's a lot of off-the-field stuff as well. The Jets were on board with that a couple years ago when they thought they were going to go to the playoffs and make these runs and things like that. It grates on you when you're not winning. And I think that there's a large contingent of people within this Jets building right now that are just kind of done, that they're just, I'm over it. I don't want this anymore. Let's just start fresh. They're done with everything that comes with Aaron in addition to the play as well. I think that they're just kind of at their end.
Right. Connor, give us just real quickly the cap implications of him staying leaving, because I know it's a little bit complicated because of all of the void years.
Oh, yeah. I wish you guys told me that. I had it written down before. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's like 36 million, or is it 40? Whenever I'm done with this, I'll text you guys, because I have it written down upstairs.
All right, perfect.
I just have to get it, because it's very confusing. Like, I called one agent, and he was like, I'm looking at this contract. It looks like they've got 80 million in dead money. And I was like, no way. So I called someone over at the check, and they walked me through it like two weeks ago, but it's just not off the top of my head.
But to your point, that's not the main reason why they'd want to move on. It's the
stuff. I don't think so. No, it's not. It's not that crazy. It's the number. Like, I originally thought it was going to be 60 million. I was like, oh my God, that's going to kill him. It's not that dramatic. I can't remember if it's like 35 or 45 million, and then you can space it off with post June 1, mm-hmm. or just eat it all in 2025,
right.
2025 and 2026, where it's like 12 million and then 30 million, something along those lines.
Right.
Like, it's a lot. I mean, it is a lot of money. It's not ideal. But it's not like this backbreaking, oh my God, $100 million, dead charge.
Connor, the other veteran, not issue, but I mean, situation you got to think about is Devontae Adams, because he's got a big number next year just from a cap hit. Forget the dead cap hit, but just from a cap hit. What's the plan with Devontae?
Well, that's the really interesting one. That's the one that is the most interesting decision to me, because Devontae can still play.
Yes.
And as a compliment to Garrett Wilson, the number two to Garrett Wilson, he'd be a great 1-2 punch. Like, that is really something that I would be intrigued with and interested with in seeing. I think the big thing with him as well is that, what does he want? Because when he left the Packers in the first place, he went to the Raiders because he wanted to play with a quarterback that he knew in Derek Carr.
Mm-hmm.
When Derek Carr left and then he wanted to leave the Raiders, he wanted to go back to a quarterback that he knew, which is why he was tied to the Saints and the Jets with Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
If Aaron Rodgers is gone, I don't necessarily know if Devontae, in the twilight of his career, is like, okay, let me run it back here with a rookie quarterback in Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's something he would sign on for. And talking to Devontae, I don't know if he knows exactly yet what he wants.
Yeah, it sounds like a Stephon Diggs situation. You send him with a young quarterback.
Yep.
You hope that he helps that young quarterback grow, but it could be equally great or equally a disaster.
Yeah,
right. And that is
real quick, guys. I got it for you. If they cut Aaron Rodgers straight up, so they just cut him, no post first June designation. It's a $49 million dead charge in 2025. If they post June 1st cut him, it's $14 million in 2025, $35 million in 2026, but they wouldn't be able to use that money that they save until after June 1st. So again, it's not ideal, but it's not like $100 or $80 million or anything like that.
I'll tell you, based on that, I would take my medicine right away. I would just take the $49 million hit right away.
That's a lot. Well, because
that's a quarter of the cap.
I get it, but to Connor's point, you described the quarterback universe without Aaron Rodgers. Isn't it a rookie and Tyrod Taylor? Like, it's not, they're not getting, they're not signing Sam Darnold. They're not signing or trading for a veteran. Like, it would literally be Taylor, who's here, and some young quarterback, whether it's Jordan Travis or someone they draft, correct? It's no one else.
Right. And by the way, teams have done this and been somewhat successful. Look at the Denver Broncos. They took a massive cap hit on Russell Wilson. They drafted a young quarterback, and he's doing okay.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's how you got to handle it. I don't want to spread it out over 2 years. Doesn't make any sense. We're talking to Connor Hughes of SNY. Does a great job, Jets and Giants. Speaking of the Giants, where do things stand right now with the job status of Joe Shane and Brian Daboll from what you're hearing?
I don't know how Brian Daboll keeps his job. And I think I talked to you guys about this a few weeks ago that, that one of the coaches that actually I know around the NFL, he was talking to me and he said that he spoke to Brian Daboll and Daboll was telling him that he felt he was coaching for his job this year.
Wow.
So this isn't some surprise. Like this isn't like what's going to happen with the Giants, the way Dable's gone into it. It's not like if he loses his job, he's like, oh man, I'm totally caught with my pants down. Like they knew going into this one. Joe Shane is the one that I think has been operating this entire time as I am safe. I am good. I am fine. It's gotten so bad that even when the Giants knew they probably weren't going to make the playoffs this year and it wasn't going to be a great year this year, I don't think they envisioned this. Like, this is horrible. Yeah. I mean, it is. They are trending towards a year where they were supposed to be celebrating their 100th year. They're trending towards their worst season in franchise history. 2-15 is abysmal. I don't see how guys keep their jobs with that. When you analyze this roster, and if you want to say unequivocally, no doubt, they are better here, where are those areas? You can say from when they inherited, when they took over 3 years ago, you can say receiver, where they've got Wandale and they've got Malik, and okay, there's one. And then you can say pass rusher with Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau. The offensive line is, yeah, it's better than what it was, but it's patchwork.
Right.
Jermaine Illuminor is not a long-term answer. Greg Van Roten is not a long-term answer. John Michael Schmitz is struggling mightily again. Like, Andrew Thomas has spent the last 2 years on the injured reserve. So, like, I don't see where you can say, like, oh, this is why they should keep their job. This is why they're so much better. Like, where is it? Like, you don't go 9-7-1 to 6-11 and 2-15 and be like, hey, we should all keep our jobs. I mean, it's just, I know John Mara does not want change. I know he wants to stay the course. I know he wants stability. But stability for the sake of just stability, that's how you get into a rut of forever. And somebody made this point. I forget who it was on social media. It might have been Dan Duggan, but I think it was a really, really smart point. But he said, if you keep this regime, head coach and general manager, they are going to force a quarterback pick, whether Shador or Cam Ward are worth a first overall pick or not. They are going to force it because they know they need a quarterback, because they know we need to save our job. So they're going to force the quarterback, and then they're going to spend dumb money in free agency, and you run the risk of putting the Giants back 2, 3, 4 years. A new regime comes in. They're not going to do that. They're going to know they're going to have a new leeway. They can look at the quarterback class and say, you know what, guys? This isn't it right now. Like, let's figure out a different way. Maybe it's Sam Darnold, and we go Travis Hunter, and then we recoup some extra draft picks by trading back, and then we can use and go up in next year's class, which is going to be better. I just think if you run it back there, it's, man, you're running the risk of a lot of trouble.
Yeah,
a lot of trouble.
Yeah, the challenge, and just is this from I think an ownership standpoint, Connor, is that you know Dave's can coach. He just hasn't had the right roster. And but then you look at this recent draft class, and you're like, man, all of these guys hit, right? Every one of them. I mean, Tyrone Tracy in the fifth round and Theo Johnson before he got hurt. Obviously, the two secondary pieces, they're both going to be really good players, and Malik Nabers is fantastic. So you hit, you know you got a good coach, but it's not the right one with this roster. It's convoluted, and it becomes one of those questions, well, whose fault is it? And when you start trying to place blame, it gets circular, and that becomes impossible.
Yeah. And then what are you going to do again? Like, are you going to say to Dable, like, okay, well, we need to make changes, so now we're going to fire Shane Bowen. Okay, well, he wanted changes when he fired Wink Martindale, which is why he went to Shane Bowen. And also, by the way, he stripped Kafka of his play-calling responsibilities and took him over, and now the offense is worse. Like, what more changes can you do? What more can you want?
Do you think, because it's interesting what you said about Dable earlier, that he felt he was coaching for his job, and Joe Shane seemed very like, oh, I got this. Like, when he did that press conference, I'll be back. Can you see a scenario where ownership changes one piece and keeps the other? Or do you think it would be a package deal the way we all assumed it was when they were first hired?
I can foresee a situation where the Giants fire Brian Dable and keep Joe Shane. And among the reasons is that John Mara alluded to this when we spoke to him at the NFL owners meeting, where he literally said they are not a package deal. Like, that was one of the questions was asked there, and it was direct. And I guess I'm used to, like, Woody Johnson and Christopher Johnson when they spoke. So when John Mara was basically just like, yeah, here's everything I'm going to tell. It was an amazing press conference. And, like, the Giants guys were like, Connor, this happens every time he speaks. I was like, wow, this is awesome. So, like, he literally said they're not a package deal. Like, John was like, they are not a package deal. I'm grading them independently. So I told you he's willing to move on from one or the other.
Right. Let me ask you this then. Who's done better at their job over the last 3 years, Joe Shane or Brian Dable?
I think Dable's done a better job than Joe Shane.
I agree.
I do. Yeah. I mean, I know this draft is good, but I think that, I mean, it's, again, we're really, really getting the nitty gritty of this one. Right. He's been great.
Connor, we were talking about the drafts, and the first one was bad. Obviously, there's a ton of question marks in the second one.
This
one hit. Right, you're right. The second one is just question marks. Like, Dante Banks, who the hell is he? Right? How good is he? Or is he just Wink's guy and he stinks in every other system type of thing? Trey Hawkins, et cetera, et cetera. But the challenge becomes not the draft. It's the free agency,
yeah.
Right. And I was alluding back to my years where a lot of those guys on those 2000 team, they were free agents,
yeah.
Right? Antonio Pierce was a free agent who, you know, pro scouted and came to the team. He was fantastic. LeVar Arrington before he got hurt, Ron Stone and Glenn Parker and all these guys that I remember from my early years, they were brought as free agents and they helped us become a winning organization. That hasn't happened here, and you see it when the young players get hurt. And all of a sudden, you're challenged depth-wise, and the product is not good enough. I said this on my broadcast. It's just, it becomes an unwatchable product on Sundays, and that's not good, and nobody's accepting that.
And Tiki, there was, what's fascinating about that, too, is that at his mid-season press conference, I asked Joe as well. I said, like, well, is there anything that you need to change or adapt in terms of your evaluation of who you pay and who you don't? And he was prepped for it. He immediately goes, well, who are you talking about? So I was like, well, you can go Leonard Williams. You can go Xavier McKinney, Saquon. He goes, well, we got Tyrone Tracy and we got Tyler Newbin, and we like those players. Tyler Newbin might be a very, very good player, right, Tiki?
Yes.
And Tracy certainly looks like a very good player. But you get what you pay for.
Right. They're not Saquon Barkley or Xavier McKinney.
Yeah, right. McKinney leads the NFL in receiving yards and is on his way to an all-pro year. Newbin had zero interceptions before he got injured. Now he's on the IR. Tracy looks like a very good player, but he's not going to win MVP this year. So, you didn't pay those players, but the guys you replaced them with, while competent and while solid, they're not these all-pro players. So there's a lot of flawed aspects of the team right now. I think there's a lot of ego involved. I think there's some arrogance involved. I mean, it's just, it's not a great spot to be in. And the free agent spot, the free agent signings, they haven't necessarily, there's no answer. Like, Bobby Okereke is a good player. It's not Antonio Pierce.
No.
I mean, they're trades. Darren Waller, the Giants, look, you talk to anyone in with the Raiders and they would tell you Waller was talking about retirement his final year there.
Right.
And the Giants traded for him expecting them to get 3 years out of him. Like, there's a lot of mistakes made by this team. And again, Evan, actually, I posed this one to you because I had this conversation in the media room the other day and I thought it was a decent argument. The Giants are kind of saying, and when Joe Shane says we're close, they're just a quarterback away, right? They need a couple pieces and then the quarterback.
No, they're not.
No, think about the Jets, though. Like, when the Jets had Sauce and Garrett and Breece and all those players that they drafted, and then they went out there and got Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Compare that team, the quarterback away Jets, to the quarterback away Giants.
Not even close.
I think just from a talent perspective, there's a difference. Now, the Jets coaching was a disaster. That's why they fell off the rails and all that. But.
Yes. Yeah, it's to me, it's completely different. I think that's Joe Shane's way of trying to explain to all of us why he thinks he should come back, honestly.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're a quarterback away. One last thing. You mentioned at the top about the Jets wanting Mike Vrabel, that being the guy that they want the most. Does Vrabel really want us? Because I'm skeptical about how appealing this job is to the outside world, and maybe that's me being a negative Jet fan. Maybe that's it. And I know that there was that report a few weeks ago that Vrabel would be open to the Jet job with the right GM, but with the Bear job out there, with potentially the Giant job out there, do you think he's going to want the Jets the way the Jets want him?
No, I don't. I don't think he'll want the Jets the way the Jets want him. I don't think anyone will want the Jets the way the Jets going to want Vrabel. It's that's the difference. Like, it's the difference between liking someone and loving someone. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of the friend zone, right? But like, you got to break your way out of the friend zone. Is what the Jets got to do with Vrabel at the moment.
I like that.
Yeah, I think that there's a chance that they can make it, and I think the fact that Vrabel, from my understanding, is willing to listen to the Jets is a key first step. Now they got to sell him. Now this isn't going to be like. With Vrabel, I don't think it's going to be a normal interview where, like, the Jets, you know, he has to convince the Jets to hire him. I think it might be the other way around, and we'll see if they're willing to do it. But again, like, this is a different situation with the Jets, man. There's a lot of good pieces there. The offensive line looks legitimately rebuilt. They're going to have a good draft pick. They've got the receiver. They got the running back. They've got some people they got to pay, but, like, there is legitimate talent here. It's not like 15 or 17 or 20. Like, it's a different Jets team that I think makes it appealing. You just have to have the other things that surround the Jets answered. You have to have those questions. What's the budget going to look like? What's the involvement going to look like outside? How much am I going to have a say compared to somebody else? Will there be other hands involved or at play here? All of those things need to be answered before you get someone like Mike Vrabel. But he's willing to listen, and if he's willing to listen, you got a chance.
Yep. Thank you, Connor. We appreciate you hopping on. Good stuff, Connor.
No problem, guys. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you very much. Great. Connor Hughes, SNY, Jets, Giants stuff. Rewind if you're just tuning in, and you can hear everything he had to say about Mike Vrabel and Brian Daboll being on the hot seat, everything. We'll get to your calls to react to it coming up at 888-808-1019.